After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. My friends' twin sisters, Lizzie and Catherine Fortunato, are celebrating 15 years in business this year, and we've been together most of the way. To fête these special two sisters, we're re-airing their episode from season one, which is one of the most beloved episodes of What We Wore to date. Lizzie and Catherine Fortunato, I am so excited that y'all are here. Thank you so much for coming all the way from New York to North Carolina to have this fantastic 10th anniversary celebration tonight. Before we get started, will y'all tell the listeners a little bit about your collection and why you chose to celebrate your 10th anniversary here?
Absolutely. I'll get started. I'm Lizzie Fortunato, the designer of the line that I own with my twin sister, Catherine. We have been working with Poole Shop and with Laura almost the entire time we've been in business. So it's been a decade of support from her, and we're just so honored to be in a store that carries amazing designers and has such a loyal clientele and such vision. But as a side note, we are Dukies. So returning to the state that we spent 4 years of college in is really also a treat, and we always love coming down to the Raleigh-Durham area.
I also just think that Laura, sort of in particular, relative to a lot of the stores that we work with, really celebrates designers and artists who are known sort of for their mixed medium, for being a little bit adventuresome with their designs, for being colorful and happy and fun. And those are all adjectives that describe the Lizzie Fortunato collection. We're obviously so honored that she's championed the brand for so long, but we also feel like we're in really good company here at Poole Shop and Capital.
You are, but it's never been hard to support you. So you girls are twins, and your parents, they didn't know they were having twins. Your mom didn't know.
That's correct.
I mean, I have a 13-year-old, and I thought I had triplets in there. I mean, I had no So it sounds crazy now that she wouldn't have known, but actually, it kind of makes sense.
She didn't know. I mean, it's the type of thing that would probably not happen in 2018, but it was 1984. She was in Delaware. She was healthy. She was young. Her sister had actually been born with some disabilities that at the time they didn't know if they were hereditary. It turns out they're not. However, she didn't really want to know anything going into it because she just didn't know what her options would be. So she figured, hey, I'm healthy. I feel great. I'm just going to do this. And then after I was born, the doctor said, you have another child inside of you. And then Catherine came
out.
I mean, she was so freaked out. But needless to say, when my brother was born 2 years later, she got every single test in the book.
This is Catherine, and I'm the lovingly known as the bonus baby in the house. Although at the time, I think that my dad probably saw double tuitions and double of everything. And I think he's the one who passed out.
My cousins are twins, and one of the daughters of the twins just had her second set of twins.
Oh my gosh.
I would die.
That's insane. That's what, I mean, I think everyone in our family was so surprised because there's no other twins in the family. So Everyone was just shocked. When they rolled my mom out to the waiting room, she has a child under each arm. And the grandparents honestly thought that she was like holding the woman next to her as baby because she was too sick to come out or something. And she was like, nope, they're both mine. And everyone was absolutely shocked.
Were y'all teeny or was...
We were, I mean, we would have made a very respectably sized baby. So we were like, Lizzie was low sixes and I was high fives. We would have been like a nice big 12 pounder.
So
my mom said she was really sick the first trimester, but she didn't live in the helicopter society we live in these days, where she was like, I was really sick, but it was my first time being pregnant. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah. So. Oh my gosh. Did y'all dress the same? Do you remember
we,
that?
You know, it's actually, I think, maybe a credit to my parents that they did not dress us too similarly. And I think the reason that is been a benefit to us now is because we were really encouraged to be different people. So, of course, she got plenty of gifts that were matching and color-coded and all of that. So I guess occasionally she couldn't help but to impress the grandparents and aunts and uncles with matching outfits. But in general, they really let us be our own people. And that extended to academics and sports and hobbies. And I think that's what has allowed Lizzie and me to be both best friends and coworkers today, is that we don't compete with each other because we really excel in different areas.
I would love to meet your mother.
It seems so overdue. We say that she needs to come down here because she would be a very happy Capital client.
And just another very strong, impressive individual. She's the first female president of the Campbell Soup Foundation.
Right.
And we get a lot of our style from her and from her mother, who is no longer with us, but was an incredible sort of our maternal grandmother was just an incredible sort of style icon in our lives, and I think inspired Lizzie a lot in her early creative days.
And did y'all grew up in Delaware, and was your grandmother nearby?
About 2 hours away in Pennsylvania. Okay. So close enough that we had a very close relationship. She was the only lady in like Amish country, Pennsylvania, who was this insane Francophile, so glamorous, would wear like a chignon and speak French. And, you know, she was very worldly for her years and where she lived. She's continues to be, I think, whenever we put together a really good outfit, we say that's a Nama outfit.
What was it? Nama?
Nama. N-A-M-A.
I love
it. Yeah, I think we couldn't say grandma, so it was Nama, but it stuck.
And so did your mom worked growing up?
She didn't work growing up. So she was trained as a lawyer and worked till we were maybe three or so. And then from then until, you know, age 20, she was a very professional mom, 18, late teens.
End of high school.
She was a very full-time mom, and she was a wonderful and continues to be the most amazing mom. We're so close, and we travel together and hang out all the time. But she went back to work when we went to school, and she has, like, really thrived and has had some incredible positions, and her position now has just, like, led her all over the country, and she's worked with Michelle Obama and her Let's Move campaign and on different amazing food initiatives throughout the country. So she's really like at the foremost of her field, and she's definitely a badass. Yeah.
Well, same thing a little bit happened to me, not in the same way, but my mother went back to work when I went to boarding school. And I remember my dad was so not supportive. It's not funny, but he was like, what am I supposed to do for dinner?
Totally. Like, yeah. Our parents got divorced. But no, it's true. I mean, how relevant of a conversation this day and age where we're surrounded by a lot of, especially in New York, really strong females who take their careers very seriously. And I think that's been a huge part of fulfillment in my mom's life in the last 20 years.
And my mom, while she had been a full-time mom for so many years, was also still really engaged. Like, she was on the board of so many things. She was so involved with our school. She was, like, always doing stuff. So I think when you're a young kid, like a lower or middle schooler, you don't, like, realize, oh, my mom's not, like, in a corporate world, because she was still out doing stuff. So I was like, oh, yeah, my mom's always, like, busy working. Right. She wasn't the breadwinner, but she was definitely, like, very busy working, doing productive things. She wasn't, like, a tennis country club mom all day. And she did, like, do some of that, too, but she wasn't – that wasn't her life.
Yeah, same with my mom.
Yeah, and I think that, obviously, that planted a lot of the fundamentals of sort of how we operate today. But it is funny, all going back to work, sort of, I mean, she maybe beat us to the punch a few years earlier, but now the playing field, especially like in terms of how we dress, in terms of how we approach work, and just kind of our lifestyle, it's so funny, you transition from being like a mother-daughter, which we still have, to just also being really good friends.
Yeah.
And so now at, you know, the respective ages of 35 and early 60s, like, we want to buy the same things online. We want to share each other's Nicholas Kirkwood shoes for the office. We want, like, we really all of a sudden have hit this tempo in our life where she jokes, she makes so much fun of us because Lizzie and I love a good Demi Lee sweater. Mm-hmm. And my mom will always be like, I love your sweater. And she's like, do not tell me you got that at a Demi Lee sample sale. Why do you never take me to these things? So she does not live in New York. She lives in Wilmington, Delaware, and has great fashion and, you know, could definitely beat us on a closet competition any day. But she is really funny because Lizzie will send her a new brand or a new thing online. Lizzie sent her a link to these cool shoes the other day that Lizzie just thought were aspirational, and my mom wrote back after 5 minutes and was like, thanks so much, bought them.
Yeah. I was like, Mom, excuse me, gonna get them. But then I texted her and I was like, well, I'll try yours and wear them a few times and decide if I want to buy them.
same size
we're like all the same size shoes. And we borrow a lot from her growing up. We adopted some bags from her and some jackets, and she definitely influenced our style, and she was always very put together. Nothing like too crazy, but always just like looked
very good. Very classic dresser.
Mm-hmm.
I think I get my love for, you know, a good blazer, a good tailored pant from my mom.
Yeah.
It had to come from somewhere.
Exactly. It definitely had to come from somewhere.
She actually wears a lot more high heels than we do now. Like, she's always in amazing heels for work. And she obviously works in a more corporate environment.
She's not. She's way tall. She's like 5'8".
Yeah.
But she has, like, great heels and also the stamina for it all day. And I was
she
like,
drives, whoa. And we live in New York where you're on travel zone streets and subways. And
so that's a big difference.
Your high heels are in your purse.
Good
at
point.
All times.
Yeah. I want to hear more about your grandmother.
Yeah, definitely.
So our,
and her
so,
style.
Totally. And actually, it's cool because both of our grandmothers had distinct influences and they were different, but they were both really impactful. So our mom's mom, Nama, first name Hope, she had all of the incredible sort of fashion inspiration. She subscribed to W Magazine well into her 70s. She would cut out articles and in her beautiful script send them to us, and truly knew more about designers probably when we were in middle school and high school than we did, because to us that was a new world.
Yeah, she really followed fashion like very closely. Like she wouldn't know when a designer had changed houses or something and mention it to us, and I'd be like, I didn't even know that was happening. So
she was in Pennsylvania.
In rural Pennsylvania. Wow. In the middle
but
of nowhere.
Born and raised in Forest Hills in, right. in New York.
From New York, and had the coolest house. I mean, we really like when my mom finally sold my grandparents' house, Kath and I reaped the benefit of that because she would go to these furniture shows in New York and just buy like the craziest stuff. You know, she had this amazing bright orange, beautiful, I think it was like Italian or something, sofa, and these awesome wall hangings that I've
mid-century,
inherited a few
but
of.
With a not cliched mid-century twist. I mean, a yeah. beautiful outdoor sculptures. I mean, she was both an outdoors woman and an avid skier and a hiker and loved her dogs. But then also, like I said, could wear her hair in a chignon and play classical piano, and was just sort of this I mean, she really was elegant. And she actually, I remember a story where she went back to, I don't know, a 20 or 30 or 40 year
I think it was more than that.
College reunion at Connecticut College where she right. graduated from. And the girls who were maybe our age now in their 30s were just flocking her and say, please tell us what you do to your skin, because you couldn't possibly be the class of whatever it was.
Yeah. 1930.
Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, she was just embodied this elegance and really, really showed inner beauty inside and out, because she was truly beautiful, but also just had this personality and spirit that was stylish and inspiring from
but
that perspective.
But she was really chic. Like, people would always say, like, oh, she's the best dressed woman in the room. And, like, she would spend money on clothes, but then she would also be thrifty at other times. And she was, like, doing high-low before high-low was even cool. Like, she
absolutely.
Would...
Absolutely. I think when she didn't have much money was when she had some of her best fashion coups.
Yeah.
I mean, to buy a long tunic and then spend all of your budget on, like Lizzie was saying, the beaded cuff was the most remarkable thing. And the fancy bejeweled woman at this particular event that she was dressing for were all gushing over her outfit. And of course, you know, it was the least expensive outfit in the room. She was sort of thrifty and resourceful and stylish. And it came from a very authentic place. Our dad's grandmother is truly not stylish at all. but we love her so much. And Granny is still with us. And Granny is amazing because she's a very savvy Italian grandmother. She doesn't own a computer and yet still will like day trade Apple stocks. Like she'll call her investment professional and is like, can you please trade this Apple? And they're like, Marion, you are way too old for that kind of volatility in your portfolio. She's like, I'm old, so it truly doesn't matter.
So Granny is just pretty sassy.
And it's funny because she'll kind of give everybody a hard time. But when it comes to Lizzie and me, she and Lizzie and I have a really fantastic relationship. And she kind of gets it. I mean, she was involved in our grandfather's construction company. And she sort of always kept the books and sort of knew about business. And so she would we'll kind of talk to her about, you know, HR problems or building team or growth problems. And she totally understands and can kind of listen to us and cut to the chase and give advice in a surprisingly meaningful way for an 80-something-year-old who has never worked in fashion and still doesn't own a computer. I mean, it's
that's
remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind cuts generations that way.
My grandmother ran my grandfather's construction company.
Isn't that amazing?
I love that. Yeah. She's extremely supportive. And actually, it's funny because she's not getting enough credit. She does beautiful handiwork and needlepoint. And in the very, very beginning, some of our designs had some of Granny's needlepoint involved in them. Like she was doing sort of like patchwork on necklaces that Lizzie would then sew together into these huge statement necklaces. Cool. So early on, Bergdorf Goodman placed a big order for this patchwork necklace, and so we went ahead and bought all the embroidery and all these canvas panels, and we're like, Granny, we need you to make 25 of these panels, you know, in a month. And Granny gets the package in the mail, and she calls us, and she's like, girls, I just really don't like this neon color. And we're like, Granny, it does not matter whether you like the neon color. Bergdorf Goodman likes the neon color. Please
she
make
was,
those
she was trying to
That's
change
amazing.
It. She still makes for us. She just made me amazing cross-stitched straps for like a vintage wood luggage rack. And it was the same thing. I was like choosing colors, like it has like this cool graphic pattern. We like found a pattern together and I was choosing colors. She was like, I don't approve of your color choices. I was like, Granny,
you have very different styles.
Me.
Very, very different styles. But it's kind of remarkable that despite all of that, from a sort of business and savvy and technical and obviously granddaughter, grandmother loving perspective. She's played this incredible role. And I think it was like a maybe a 75th birthday present. Lizzie and I actually made a press book for her of all the clippings from Lizzie Fortunato that either mentioned her or wow. had a piece or had a piece inspired by her, because so much lot, of the yeah. early, really technical handiwork came from what Granny had taught us.
What's your first fashion memory as children?
I first wanted to be a cartoon animator. So that was my first introduction to the art world. I really was obsessed with cartoons. I collected cells and was obsessed with drawing cartoons. And I remember maybe in fifth or sixth grade telling my mom that the part about cartooning that I loved the most was drawing the characters' outfits. So I thought I should go to sewing class.
I love it.
At which point she signed me up for a class that was about all 65-year-old women and one 13-year-old. That was me. So I learned to sew. I made my prom dresses and did wow. all of that and sewed a lot with my grandmothers. Then I also just have pretty early memories of having like pretty distinct style. I think
you
it was
girls
maybe
both have distinct style.
Well,
always.
I don't know how good it was back then, but it was.
Well,
but I was stubborn about it.
I
was
good,
stubborn
right?
about it. Yes, for sure. So in fourth grade, it was a white poet's blouse and bright yellow jeans, and I wore them
oh, I
like
love.
Day
Guess
in
jeans
and day
or,
out.
What
yeah, I
jeans?
Think they were. I don't know if they were guests. They were probably guests.
What
I just remember the bright yellow jeans, and like I wore that outfit so much, and I just
what
like
shoes?
Felt like I could conquer the world in it. That's a good question.
I Claws? Think they were like cowgirl boots with it.
Oh. There were a lot of cowgirl boots.
But there was a particular, again, fourth grade, so mid-90s colonial Williamsburg field trip where it was like
oh my God.
650 degrees outside, and we were learning to churn butter, and every kid was in there, you know, Patagonia fleece. And khaki pants, and Lizzie was wearing a skirt that our parents had just brought her back from France and had to spend the entire field trip inside because she was not adequately dressed.
Oh, yeah. I was freezing,
but
I looked good.
She looked amazing. She looked amazing.
And yeah. The colonial women were like, oh, I love that.
It was such a good skirt. And I actually do remember my mom saying, you shouldn't wear that. And I was like, come hell or high water, I'm wearing this skirt on this field trip and I'm going to look good. But I froze.
Exactly. Fashion at any cost.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything you made in the sewing classes?
I made, oh, it was like so basic. I can remember like a brown and white plaid dress that looked like something from 1950. I remember doing a lot of like taking apart stuff that my mom had had bought me and remaking it, which didn't thrill her. But I was always like adding like weird pockets to things and like cutting apart denim and like repurposing it. So yeah, I definitely remember stuff I made. It's not things I'm particularly proud of now, although the prom dress that I made was good. I still have that.
What did you study in school? I mean, it's interesting. I'm just so interested that you started being that connected to
yeah,
fabric,
I always loved like
clothing.
Tactile things. I yeah. studied English and art history and really thought I like wanted to write. I loved writing. I loved studying English. Had internships at magazines throughout college and stuff, but was always making things on the side. And so when I got to New York, having already been making jewelry at Duke and kind of laying the groundwork for a business there, when I moved up to New York, I was working in fashion PR briefly, but had a lot of friends who had entered the magazine industry and said, you know, I know you were make jewelry, and like at that point it was kind of like a nights and weekends thing, but they said, my editor's working on a blue story. If you could like messenger a blue necklace over, maybe I can try and get it in the magazine. And I was like, messenger? I have like $5 to my name. I'll drop it off at the Hearst messenger office at like 7 a.m. before I go to my real job. And
but
so,
was that like a production issue in that like you it would have been clothing if you had been able to produce
oh,
that, but jewelry
like how,
was easier
that's a good
to put
question.
Together?
I think at some point I just kind of like got over the clothing thing. I think at the time I thought, oh, like making clothing seems like it would take too long. I'll just make strings and beads instead. But little did I know that now everything is so laborious and takes forever. So I don't know that argument still holds. But
Lizzie puts together and takes apart a necklace, you know, 14 or 15 times in the initial sampling process. Yeah. And it's, you know, still in our 30s, 10 years in, you know, 3 a.m. when she gets her best sampling done. So the idea that she wanted to do jewelry because it was somehow speedier or more efficient than making a garment is completely
I think
false.
I also got to the point where I loved the idea of an accessory being able to change an outfit. I can remember like finding cool beads or like making a little headband or something and thinking like, okay, I can like wear that same yellow jeans and white poet's blouse, but like accessorize it. And now it's suddenly a different outfit. And that kind of stuck. And then it just grew pretty organically from there.
Did you have, was your mother into jewelry? I mean, did you have a real connection to jewelry?
That's a good
as a
question.
Young person?
Not terribly. I mean, she bought us jewelry. Like, she bought us special things at different occasions. And she wore cool accessories, but nothing, you know, out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I think almost the ultimate irony when we were starting is that we're pretty low maintenance girls in the sense that we're not dripping in jewels, and we were never like lustful jewelry people wanted, you know, gemstones or something like that.
Yeah.
So the irony was that for girls who, like, you know, work 12 hours days and run around New York City, we're not fussy. But I actually think the beauty in that is communicating that jewelry doesn't need to be fussy, and it could be part of an outfit just like your favorite sweater or your favorite clog or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like I thought about it more as just like changing an outfit as opposed to like, okay, here's that last thing that you put on. Like when I think about my jewelry, it's the first thing I put on. And I'm like, okay, I need a cool like printed skirt and a black t-shirt and I'm good to go. And then it really becomes like the center of my outfit. So I don't know. I think Catherine's right. I never thought about it like I need to, you know, be dolled up and have that last layer.
Do you remember the first piece you made?
Oh my gosh, I've made so many. I don't know if I remember the first. I remember in high school going to bead stores in Philadelphia where you could, you know, design your own jewelry and buying beads and like having some pretty simple beaded necklaces that I would like labor over and wear day in and day out. There was one that had like pastel green beads on it, but I don't know. There were a lot.
Before we started working with metalsmiths and doing sort of the technical level we have now, there was a lot of more laborious seed beading, like Lizzie was saying. And don't you remember some of those amazing rope earrings that like you would
but those weren't the first. Oh, I think that was more college level as opposed to high school, because I definitely was going to bead stores in high school and stringing beads, and I don't know.
It's amazing when we have high school but mainly college friends who pull out their Lizzie Fortunato archives.
Well, that's I want to hear about that, actually. I'm so fast. I went to Chapel Hill, UNC, right next door. I don't think of Duke as being particularly accessorized.
Yeah, exactly.
Fashionable.
Exactly.
So tell me.
We had no competition.
What was that like? You're not from up north, but Delaware is mid-Atlantic. Sure. But what was that like coming to the South? And were people more accessorized? Were people...
First of all, we're all freshmen in college. So looking back, you see, you know, tank tops and fashion that should absolutely never be repeated. But that might be a reflection of being college age, no matter where you are.
Right.
With that said, I do think that there was this appreciation for the fact that Lizzie and I would deck ourselves out in her creations. So go to like a formal or, you know, a party and have on a really cool pair of earrings or a statement necklace. And credit to the girls around us, they took notice and they said, you know, I've never seen anything like that. Can I borrow a necklace? Can I buy a pair of earrings for my, you know?
But to Laura's point, Duke is not the most fashionable place. And I think unlike some Southern schools where you walk in and you're kind of like wowed by these women who dress like well for a college student.
Have you ever been to Ole Miss?
I've never been, but I can only imagine. So it wasn't anything like that where we walked in and we were like, whoa, these people are really dressed and like they look so different. Like for the most part, people dressed like across the board not that well.
Right. Well, it's also a sportier school and all of that.
And did your style change when you got to Duke?
It didn't change that much when we got there. It changed a lot in the years right after.
Yeah.
Like, I think when
it
we moved
only
to
got
New York,
better when we left.
We moved to New York, it like matured a lot. I think even though people didn't necessarily have amazing style, there were a lot of girls who were used to shopping, who had gone to malls in high school.
Sure.
And being in Durham, there was nothing to buy. So even if they didn't have great style, like the fact that we were hosting a trunk show and selling cool earrings for $50 was like, oh, great, let's go shopping. So these girls who were used to a kind of shopping culture suddenly were like a very captive audience for us.
And you literally, you had your first trunk show in the dorm room.
It wasn't in the dorm room. It was in a, so we were making everything in the dorm room, and then Catherine was.
The two of y'all were making it?
Just me.
Okay.
Yeah, I was cracking the whip.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, Catherine was like, be
I was actually going to Lizzie's Bio 101 class so that she would pass that while she took
jewelry
orders.
Were you doing like a parent trap thing?
And
like
my dad still wants a tuition refund because I went to the required classes for the both of us.
True. And then Catherine was working at like a really cool, I don't even know if it still exists, but a cool restaurant at the time called Parizade's.
Oh, yeah.
And
so good.
Yes. It was like a big hangout and everyone loved it. And I remember she asked one of the managers there, you know, my sister makes jewelry. You guys are closed on Sunday nights. Can we rent out the back room for a Sunday night? And it was like gangbusters.
Wow.
Like girls lined up on a Sunday at 5 p.m. to the back room at Parizade's to buy jewelry.
That's
I think we sold
out. Did you
have
food too?
I think there was food and drink. No one was focused on the food and drink.
Really?
We sold out really quickly, like in 25 minutes.
And so, Catherine, were you like, okay, this is a business?
That's when the light bulb kind of clicked. When I was like,
I once had a mentor, because my background's in finance, that says if you sell out too quickly, it means that you priced everything all wrong.
Yeah.
So you don't even know the upper limit of where this market lies, because how do you know what someone would have paid? We definitely saw an I saw an opportunity then. And I think that was the moment where, even if it was just going to be a college opportunity, because at the time in sophomore year, we didn't think this would be our job after college. We still said, like, look, this is a great way to earn money. We could do trunk shows 2 to 3 times a year. It subsidized spring breaks to Paris when all of our other friends were like going to Cancun. And so it really was this sort of amazing way. I also think Lizzie and I, after a few tailgates, were like, all right, what else does college have to offer? So I think creating the fundamentals for this accidental business was partly our destiny. It was really, it sort of matched our personalities.
But Catherine definitely spearheaded the entrepreneurial side of it. I mean, if girls were coming by the room being like, are you guys the sisters who make the jewelry? I would be like, oh yeah, you want some here, have it. Like, I would give it away. And Catherine's
she
like,
would still be giving it away.
I was like, sign up for this mailing list. We're having a trunk show in 3 months.
Exactly. It's really funny. Our old flyers around campus were hot pink with this black Lizzie Fortunato script and a fleur-de-lis logo.
Oh my God.
It's evolved a lot, but I mean, I guess we can't knock our early brand image too much, but it obviously is
funny.
A testament to the fact that we started young.
It's interesting to go from this almost being a business and then to doing totally different things.
Absolutely.
And then coming back to it.
I think that we knew there was a promise there, but at least for me personally, I also saw on the flip side, like, my parents have given us this extraordinary education, and they probably didn't spend all this money for us to move to New York and make jewelry and sell it for $50, which at the time, the numbers wouldn't have worked. And I think both of us really loved the courses we took at Duke, and I was an economics major and liked the idea of exploring the finance world. At the time, while it was beautiful that it had turned into something cool, it was sort of a seed, and it didn't seem like the obvious thing we would do after school. And I think that we both thought it would never sustain us. So it was just obvious that, like, we've got to get a job to pay rent if we want to move to New York.
The decision was easier for me. Catherine went and, like, found a job that she loved, and most people are like, oh, you stayed on Wall Street because you got paid a lot, right? And Catherine's like, no, I'm a math nerd, and I actually loved it. Leaving for her was hard. Huh. For me, I was working in fashion PR, which I don't think I knew what it was when I took that job.
Lordy.
I really did not like it. And I was kind of getting, as I mentioned, this accidental press anyhow, because I had friends who were, you know, interns basically at magazines, the bottom of the totem pole, and they were helping, like, get stuff on the pages of magazines. And I didn't even have a phone number or a website to list it to, but I was getting press. And so it was pretty easy for me to make the decision to hop ship. I only lasted about 11 months. I wasn't making, you know, any money anyhow. So it was...
And she had a twin sister who would pay her electric bills.
Yeah.
There's a few memories of Lizzie coming to, I think it was a summer internship. I was at the floor of the stock exchange, and Lizzie shows up in, you know, a short jean skirt. I'm like, Lizzie, there's no denim on the stock exchange. So she was there to, you know, get rent money or something like that.
Catherine, what did you wear when you worked on Wall Street? Was that hard?
Lizzie jokes that I still have not graduated from a blazer, and that in my moments of
panic.
You
are wearing loafers.
It's true. I'm wearing loafers and sort of a jacket.
It's Dries there.
Actually, exactly. I did not wear Dries on Wall Street. But, you know, it is funny. I got a lot of comments from the quintessential Wall Street bros who were on my desk, who I adored, but would definitely come in and be like, oh, is it Michael Jackson tribute day? What is that blazer you're wearing? Or like, oh, you look Amish today. And those were also just very good tailored Philip Lim pieces,
right.
15 years ago. And I remember, you know, there'd be like a sale at Prada or something, and I'd go buy fancy high heels because I thought that's what you were supposed to wear if you worked on Wall Street. So I joke, some of my oldest, best pieces in my closet are Wall Street pieces. But no, I think I pushed the limits.
For Wall Street, but that's very conservative for fashion.
Exactly.
I remember the first time we went to Paris to show the line, we were doing a trade show, and we were, like, so jet-lagged. We had been out really late the night before, partying with our friends in Paris. And the first day of the trade show, we're, like, running late, and I put on some crazy outfit, and Catherine goes straight to, like, a black pantsuit. And I was like, oh my gosh, Catherine, you're in Paris. Like, I can't believe that even made it into your suitcase. Like, what are you wearing? And it was so funny because we just, like, have this ongoing joke. Like, Catherine gets nervous and she, like, just runs for a pantsuit.
It's true. Lizzie definitely had to loosen me up over the years and teach me that, you know, the outfit that you wear at 2 p.m. at work does not need to be the same outfit you wear at 8 p.m. out to dinner.
Yeah.
So she's helped the closet evolve a lot.
I love it. Will you tell the story about how you left your job?
Spring of 2008. And I had only been there for less than a year. So around month 10 after I started, you know, like a month after college.
And And what were you doing, Lizzie? Like,
yeah, sure. I was in the accessories department, which was really cool because a lot of the people I worked with are now, you know, like accessories editors at Marie Claire and Elle in Style, and they have been tremendously supportive. But I was in the accessories department at Paul Wilmot Communications, okay. So I was working with some really high-end luxury clients. Like, we did Nancy Gonzalez handbags. We also did a lot of celebrity lines. So Gwen Stefani. Line was with us at that time, and Puff Daddy, one of Sean Combs' lines. I don't know. There was like a lot of celebrity stuff. And so for anyone who's interested in like the celebrity culture, going out to cool events in New York, it would have been a great job. Yeah. I happened to want to like be in my apartment making stuff.
That's
on
my
the
nightmare.
Other side.
It's the worst.
On the other side of the curtain. So I just wasn't suited to it. So I had been thinking about leaving and thinking, you know, like, I'm not making that much money anyhow, but I don't know exactly how this works. And I feel like I would have to, like, ask mom and dad for money, which I don't want to do. And I, you know, was just, like, kind of trying to wrap my head all around it. And I had spoken to Catherine a lot about it and said, like, let's try and do this. At this point, we kind of were making things and selling things anyhow. Like,
we were doing periodic trunk shows in New York, but we realized that with two full-time jobs in New York, that was extremely
hard. Yeah, and even though I made no money, I worked a lot. There were always events every night, and like as the lowest person in the job, you're the girl standing outside with the clipboard, so I wouldn't get home until like 1 a.m., and then sometimes I would stay up and make jewelry and have like 4 hours of sleep and then go back to work the next morning for a job I didn't like. So I remember saying to Catherine, like, if we want to do this more wholeheartedly, I just think I need to quit entirely, which was so daunting. And finding the money, whilst you didn't need a ton of money to start a jewelry line, a costume jewelry line especially, it was still daunting. So I left in March of 2008, and that summer I was just trying to like lay the groundwork, get things figured out, design a first collection. And
they would pound the pavement around the West Village and go into cute little boutiques, and the shop girl would say, "Oh, I love your necklace," and we'd be like, "Do you? We have a coat full of them."
And Catherine opens her coat.
Hope that maybe the shop girl also would be the boutique owner in some cases. Yeah. And that actually worked. A few stores picked us up on consignment, and Bergdorf found us from one of those stores in the West Village where, you know, their buyers would come down and scope sort of the up and coming.
But even getting
boutiques
picked up by a
West
few
Village.
Boutiques like doesn't, you know, pay the rent.
Right.
So it was just a few months later in August of 2008. That was our 24th birthday, and Catherine was long gone to work when I woke up because poor girl was working 24 hours a day. And she had left a card with a note in it saying, like, "I think you need to wholeheartedly do this. Like, don't even consider going to look for other jobs." And there was a check for $10,000 saying, "Let's do this together. Follow your dream."
It makes me cry.
I was probably like too hungover to cry. No, I mean, it was like the most gracious thing that anyone's ever done. It was absolutely incredible. And it's literally what we started with. And it grew so organically from there. Like, we've never raised money. We own the entire thing ourselves. We are sustainable. Like, that's something that we're so proud of. And while we've toyed with different, like, you know, growth opportunities and stuff, it's still nice to know that it was founded from that.
Absolutely. Y'all both recently got married.
Within three months of each other.
I want to hear about that, and I want to hear what you wore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's funny because we dated our respective boyfriends, now husbands, for about 10 years each. And
oh my gosh, really?
Yes. My parents thought.
So they're basically brothers now.
They are definitely brothers. I mean, it's when you're twin sisters and you spend 30 years living together, it's really hard to break the seal and start living with somebody else.
Yes.
And we love them, and they put up with the fact that they know that Lizzie and I take our relationship with each other extremely seriously. So,
not to mention have a business together.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Are constantly on phone and text or in person with each other. So after dating for 10 years each and our parents being very eager for one or both of us to get married and move along with things, Nick and I got engaged, and the day after our engagement party, and this was a little bit planned by Peter with my permission, Peter proposed to Lizzie when all of our family and friends were in town. Aww. For my engagement party. So Nick and I got married in May of 2017 in Portugal. We did a destination wedding. Lizzie and Peter got married 3 months later in August of 2017 to the weekend in upstate New York.
But it was funny because my dad was like, "No closer than 3 months." So we did 3 months to the weekend. He was like, "You guys are trying to give me a heart attack."
And he claims that was terrible, but he knows that he was the dad who threw the two best parties of the summer.
Exactly.
So he is totally proud, even though he will tell you that we put him, you know, through the ringer with two weddings in 3 months. We sort of bookended the summer. So we opened the summer with one, and then just as everybody's really sad that summer is coming to an end. We had another huge shebang.
That's so
and,
awesome.
It was really fun because it, you know, brought a lot of the same people together. So I wore a Layla Rose dress. Aww. I wore, obviously, Lizzie Fortunato jewelry.
Lizzie got engaged at Barriacina.
Exactly.
You yeah. know, that's Layla's favorite restaurant.
I did not know that.
It is. Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
That is amazing.
That's one of our favorite restaurants.
We are such admirers from afar. We don't know her personally, so you'll have to connect us someday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's the coolest. Those wedding gowns are
gorgeous. Oh, they're amazing. Yeah. Awesome. I sort of had this feeling that I always knew that I wanted that. And sure enough, you start looking and there's a million options out there and it kind of becomes this crazy, obviously, industry. But I found a dress I loved. I don't think I overthought it too much. I wore Lizzie Fortunato jewels. I wore a Wes Gordon dress for my rehearsal dinner, which Aww. Is obviously so special now that he's at Carolina yeah. Herrera. I wore a beautiful...
And was it white?
It was like a creamy, white. A cream
white.
It
was white.
Don't yeah. you love? I love when brides
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, totally. It was really good. And a really great floral Lizzie Fortunato headband. That was the coolest Aww. Piece that obviously never made it into production because it was really over the top. But it worked perfectly for my yeah. rehearsal. And a Gigi Burris custom veil. Aww. So, you know, the beauty of being That's in so this nice. Industry is you have a lot of friends who want to come out and support you. Oh, and an Irene Newirth engagement ring. Aww. So, you know, really surrounded by truly our friends and mentors yeah. and people who have done everything from late night drinks when you're, you know, moaning about the industry to your CFDA recommendation letters to, you know, your sort of fangirl crushes of other people whose business you want to emulate.
Yeah.
And we really, I think, get to practice what we preach by wearing and celebrating those people too.
That was really neat.
I didn't necessarily plan on making my own dress, but I ended up making my own dress. We do the embroidery for our leather goods in India, and one of the embroidery houses has an office in New York, and I was there one day. They do exquisite work. So I was in their office and found this incredible swatch of metallic embroidery that I loved. And the girl who I work with there, like, knows the price point of our bags and was like, don't look at that. That's just not going to happen on your bags. And I was like, I'm getting married. And she's like, it's hot pink. And I was like, well, you guys could make it in any color. Like, this is what you do. So one of my friends, Jenny Cupano, who I think you know, she had been at Philip Lim for a while. She's now at Sakai. And her friend at Philip Lim was a pattern maker. So I worked with him and we kind of like designed a pattern knowing that we would embroider the entire bodice. And we like went to B&J and got like a beautiful silk and he built the whole pattern and it was a fitted bodice with like kind of a billowy skirt. And then we sent all the silk pieces. And I, like, hoped and prayed because we were, like, cutting it down to the wire. And occasionally some stuff will come back from India with, like, a pen mark on right. it or a fingerprint on it. But I sent these pieces of white silk that were going to be assembled into the bodice to India. And they embroidered them with the metallic embroidery. But they did it in shades of, like, cream and bronze. It was so cool.
Oh, how beautiful.
And then it came back about a month before the wedding date. And he sewed it. And it was perfect. And now, actually, I have to say I am consider it's so cool and I want to wear it again, so I'm considering cutting it off and making it into a, like a peplum top because I want to yeah. be able to enjoy it. It's in my closet and it's like so cool and we worked so hard on it together. It was so much fun, but I don't know, I'm like
where
debating.
Where are both of them now?
Mine's they're both in our respective yeah. apartment closets
and the mandatory, you know, dry cleaning bag.
Yeah, they're in the like closet. The King's cleaner bag and still haven't been touched, so I might do something with mine, we'll yeah. see. But it was really such like a fun project.
Were you sort of planning them obviously at the same time?
Yeah, it was surprisingly
peaceful
and actually like synergetic in all the right ways. Mm-hmm. I mean it, we were really lucky that one was destination, one was local. Yeah. The vibes were a little different. The outfit shopping kind of, it was double the fun as opposed to both saying like, oh, I want that same dress. And I think for being twins and always being highly coordinated, we definitely have unique styles, so there was never a moment where we were, you know, having a cat fight over both wanting the same pair of white shoes or something like that.
And you can probably speak to this too, but like when you do have your own business that requires so much of your attention, there's almost like a limit on how much time you can expend worrying about other stuff. So like we were both super involved in our wedding planning, but we didn't deliberate about things as much as I thought we would have. And partly it's because like, okay, we have a very full-time job. Like I can't spend so much time deliberating over like these napkins. And so we were pretty decisive on our planning.
The best events, whether they're a wedding or just a dinner party when everybody really loves you and you totally. Love everybody, yeah. it can't go wrong.
It can't go wrong.
It
like gives me shivers. Like both of our weddings were just like so much fun. It's the kind of party you want to have like every single year because there was just so much love in the room at both of them.
Aww. Absolutely. And there, it didn't matter what you were wearing at that moment, even though the fashions at both weddings were pretty epic. But it didn't matter what you were wearing because there was obviously so much joy in the room. And we've gotten to share that together with the Capital 20 year, with 10 year festivities, but obviously being surrounded by a lot of great creatives and business people in our professional careers has been sort of a similar parallel of, if it's not bringing us joy, it's not worth doing.
Yeah. And being around people that really want the best for you, which
totally.
Is
totally.
My favorite question is, what did you wear to the prom?
My story is actually good because despite the fact that I've landed myself in a fashion shop, growing up, I hated shopping. It was this terrible, visceral thing where my mom would take us to the Gap on the go back to school shopping. And my mom would be like, here, you need this jean jacket. Lizzie needs this jean jacket. I'm like, temper tantrum on the floor. I don't need a new jean jacket, Mom. My jean jacket from last year was completely fine. I don't know if I was an anti-consumer that I didn't want my parents spending the money. I don't know what it was.
It went into finance.
Meanwhile, I'm like, I'll take hers. I'll take two.
I need two.
Exactly. So sure enough, in very Catherine Fortunato fashion, prom rolls around. And this wasn't senior prom at our school. I think you got to go as a junior or something. So it was the year before senior prom. And my mom said, we got to go get your dress. It's a month before. We've got to get your dress. Mom, I don't need a dress. I'll wear something I have.
I don't need a dress.
In quintessential form. And day of prom, I decide I need a dress.
Oh
day
my
of.
Gosh.
I mean, I was just totally, what a miserable kid to have on the day of prom. So
wait, were you freaking out the whole time or were you just kind of like?
No, I probably had it lined up like 4 months in advance.
But were you asking her like, what are you wearing?
I don't think you cared about my
destiny.
I don't
think I care. I think I was like very selfish with my own fashion choice. I was just like consumed about like whether my nail polish would match or something. Like,
good luck, lady.
And my mom is such a saint because we found a black and white checked, was it laundry?
I don't know, but it was so chic and we still have it.
Black and white checked floor length.
It was like black and white gingham like Michael Kors did 3 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. And I cut
it. It
was just sort of like a,
like a sweetheart, like spaghetti strap fitted bodice and then like a really cool.
Oh, how pretty.
I mean, it was pretty classy for being day of. And my mom had to get it hemmed day of as well. I mean, she was really.
Bless that woman.
Really was so, so good that day and every day. Anyway, Lizzie's right. We cut it off a few years ago and that dress is still in my closet. And it still fits.
Ooh, oh, look at you.
I should have worn it tonight.
Did you have accessories? Accessory
I'm
ladies?
Sure we did. I mean, I'm sure you made us some accessories. We've got to pull up pictures because that will be one of our to-dos for pictures for
and
you guys.
Do you remember the shoes?
Yes. It wasn't Via Spiga really big when we were in high school?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I wore Via Spiga shoes.
High heels?
Yeah. High heels. Oh, yeah. Because Lizzie and I think that we're short, and I guess at 5'4", we are a little bit short. And
at the time, we were really short. I think we were like,
5'2".
Exactly. 4'9". And so we when it was time to dress up, we always thought that heels were the way to go because, you're a junior in high school, and that's what you do. Heels, eyeshadow, hair straightener,
And did you do your hair? What about your hair?
I'm sure we got our hair done.
Yeah.
But we have a joke with our best girlfriend who now lives in Charleston that every year the primping time would get earlier and earlier when you would start. And sure enough, her brother in true fashion was like, the day of our weddings, I think we probably started, the night before. And he's like, well, it follows suit that you added another 12 hours to the lead up time for
But
for
that's
primping.
Just the most fun part. It's like but, more fun.
Getting ready is always the best part of the entire event.
Yeah,
so, those habits started very young.
Yeah. So my prom dress memory is that I made it, and I also still own it, but I probably don't fit into it. And it was lavender raw silk, V-neck, fitted, long, and it was so pretty. And I think it got passed around to a bunch of our friends, who also wore it to their proms and stuff because it was like...
Sleeveless, too?
Yeah, sleeveless. It was like... so classic. And I did wear a really cool necklace, which I didn't make, that my mom had bought. And it was like this iridescent ribbon with huge beads on it.
Ooh, how pretty.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's like one of my best
Super
early
chic.
Looks.
Oh my God, it sounds really good.
It was good.
I do remember, and I feel like we were talking about this earlier, we were asking if we had any issues planning the weddings in sync with each other. And Lizzie and I really have rarely ever fought about our outfits, but there was one Father's Day or Easter or some sort of like
occasion
mini
where you
occasion
go out to lunch.
That. And my mom had come home with two dresses and Lizzie and I laid eyes both on the green floral with the off-the-shoulder straps. And there are very few fights that we can remember for the books, and that green dress was one of them.
And Catherine won, which is so unusual.
When Ming's got the dress.
Yeah, she got to wear the dress. Like, I had to wear the other one that my mom got, which we don't even remember.
We have no memory of the other dress. But that green dress with the off-the-shoulder stripes. There were tears. My parents could not understand why we both obsessed over the same one. But we so did funny. Have one dress fight about 25 years ago. And, and neither of us have forgotten about it.
Thank you all so much for being here.
It is such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's so fun to be here.
And Laura, thank you for all the support.
Oh, love you gals.
We love you.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.